Well, how are you doing, everyone? I was going to say it's great to see you. I can't see you. This is as weird as Robert has tried to explain to me it would be with regards to talking to you all down the view of a lens. I can only see the back of my phone right now, but it's what we have. I really wish I could see all your beautiful faces. I'm not going to tell you how many times I've had to restart this video because I've kind of said or done something wrong. The phone's actually dropped off a few times as well, but we'll try and make our way through 1 Timothy 5 together. And it's great to be able to do this together. And I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am whenever these videos are put up in order just to be able to work through as a church. So we're going to be looking at 1 Timothy 5, so you can have a Bible or something that we can read this through. This is where Paul is writing to Timothy, and at this particular stage here, chapter 5, he's writing to him with a list of instructions and some wise words. Some Bibles actually call this instructions for the church, but really what it is, it's Paul giving Timothy words of wisdom and how to deal with different groups of people within the church, and how really about how the gospel within our lives and the love of Jesus should be evident in the way that we treat other people. And the people that he talks about here is the different people with different age brackets, for those who are older than us particularly. He talks about how we should treat the widows and how we should meet their needs. He then goes on to talk about how we should treat elders. He actually talks about another group of people there with regards to those who are under the yoke of slavery, but that's in chapter 6, and so hopefully we'll be able to look at that next week. But it's really looking here about how our relationships and how we interact with people, how the gospel shapes all of our church and our relationships, and dealing with people who are in different age brackets and different needs and different groups than ourselves. So let's just read this through together. We'll break it up into groups and just see what it says. So we'll just do verse 1 and 2, chapter 5 first. It says, "Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity." Now, I have to be honest, I really struggle to talk about the first verse because I didn't want to make a big deal out of it because I'm scared that my own father-in-law would make a big deal out of it. So I feel I need to make a poignant point straight at the start. And that isn't, when it says do not rebuke an older man harshly, it's not talking about not correcting someone. As a pastor, as an elder, as a member, we all have responsibility in a loving way to speak into other people's lives whenever there is sin within them, or whether they're stepping out of what the teachings of the Bible. It's a loving thing in order to do. But what Paul is writing to Timothy about here is saying, listen, how you do this is really important, because he's asking us in order not to be to speak harshly to an older man, but to view the older man as you would your father, and how an older woman should be treated as your mother. And of course, the way that you treat to your mother and father and the way that you speak to them is going to be radically different to how you speak to your own siblings, your brothers and your sisters. I mean, I've only had to speak to my dad and my mum about a serious issue on just one or two occasions. And my whole demeanour, my approach, the words that I used, how I went about doing it was completely different to how I would speak to my own sisters or my own brother-in-laws, who I could speak more directly to, or I could even put in a wee jibe, a wee joke, and a wee, just be more straight with. Because they know I have their back. I have a brother and sister relationship with them. No matter what happens, they know that we'll always love each other, but you can be more direct with them. But with regards to when it came to my parents, there's a more respect there. They're older than I am. They have more life experience than I have. They're wiser than I am. And so, yes, you may have to speak to them at some point. But how you do that, Paul is saying, is really important. not to simply go in there, steam in there and rebuke them and be harsh with them, but to do it in a respectful way. And it's also talking about how you treat the younger men and women within your church as well. I think it's a really poignant type, a really poignant end of verse 2 there with regards to when it talks about dealing with your women as sisters with absolute purity. And I think this is basically says what it does on the tin. This is basically saying there should be no sleaziness, there should be no inappropriate behavior at all. But listen, just the way that you would protect your sister and fight for her. I mean, I'm basically trying to continuously tell Timothy all the time that you need to be able to protect your sister in years to come, because you're the one who's going to have the boots on the ground right next to her, so to speak, and you need to fight for her honor, and you need to make sure that people respect her. Well, that's the way that we should be with all women within the church, that there is no place for inappropriate glances, inappropriate talk or any sleaziness whatsoever. But you should treat all women as if you would either your mother or as you would your own sister. And I was opening this up a bit here. I know this is the Bible verses here directly talking about if you have to go and talk to them about serious issues, but I was really thinking about on everyday matters. I mean, what does this look like? I mean, if you're in the Bridge and it's on a Sunday and it's you basically want a tea and coffee and you desperately want one of those tray bakes that I'm kind of like longing for right now. And if my mother and father were there, I wouldn't just get up and walk past them. I wouldn't just get up and get myself a tea and coffee. I'd be asking them, is there anything that they want? I think if my brother and sister were there and I hadn't seen them for a week or longer than that, I'd at least say hello to them and ask how they are. I wouldn't just necessarily just walk past them. And yet quite often in churches, what you can find is that the young people go with the young people and the old people go with the old people and so forth. And people kind of break up. And the wording that's used here in 1 Timothy is really giving an analogy of a family, about the older people being your mother and your father, about the younger people being your brothers and your sisters, and you should treat them as such. And therefore, don't ignore them and don't walk past them, but to actually spend time with them and to get to know them and to ask how their week has been. I think this is really quite an important point, because people have come to me in the past and have maybe asked if our community groups or engaged groups can maybe separated due to particular ages. And sometimes you find this in different churches. You might find that singles will have a group and young couples will have a group and the older generation might have a group, and sometimes they can even be split up with certain hobbies. And there's no doubt that good relationships are formed on them because you're so similar. But that isn't here what we're reading within chapter 5 here. This is giving a makeup of a family where there's old and where there's young. And I think our church and our community and our engaged group should reflect that. That the oldest person within the church should know what peer pressures the teenager are going through, particularly within school, or the youngest member of the engaged group should know how they can pray and how they can maybe practically help those who are older within their group. And there really needs to be a family-like dynamic within it. And that's why we're quite adamant in order to have all those variety of age groups within our engaged groups. One lady did come to me, this is a long time ago now, and she was discussing the possibility about moving an engaged group in order to go with more people her own age bracket. She was she felt that there wasn't a lot of people that she could relate to on her level. And I do understand that, and it's important in order to get people you can confide in and the same life experiences. And she wanted to go and find more of this within a different group. And I asked her, like, this woman was married. I said to her, is there any young couples that are married within your group? And she said, yeah, there's a few. I said, do you think you've got any wise words of wisdom? Is there anything that maybe you look back in your own marriage that you could give them some advice for? And she said, oh, I've got loads of advice and things that I'd be able to say to young couples these days. And I said, well, that's it. That's how it works. How about inviting them around, if not just maybe during a Connect week, and asking how things are, that the man speak to the man and the woman speak to the woman, or as a couple speaking it together, and share and pray with one another and feed into their lives. And from that way, you won't have any of these cliques or different age groups, but you'll be able to have people who can actually feed into each other's lives. And I know I'm going off point here, and I'm talking about more about how we can serve in a church. And these verses are directly talking about how we should speak to those who are older than us, and how to treat those who are younger than us. But I think an important point for me here is that Paul gives an analogy as a family, and that's really the way that the church should always look, and our relationships should be with of all groups and all ages. But let's move on here to verses 3-8, where Paul then talks about widows and how we should treat them. He says this: give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family, and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts a hope in God and continues night and day to pray and to ask God for help. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead, even while she lives. Give the people these instructions so that they know, so that no one may be open to blame. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied their faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I mean, Kerry and I, we joke sometimes with Timothy and Naomi, our children, as we say that we're training them up in order to look after us whenever the time comes. And even though we joke about it, according to these verses here, it's dead on. That's how it should be. That just like a parent would look after a child whenever they need fed and they need clothes and they need a safe place in order to sleep, that then that child will look after its parent. And it actually says in verse 4, in order to repay its parent and make sure that they have a safe place to sleep and that they've got clothes and that they're well fed. And that's exactly how Paul is instructing the church in order to act. Paul doesn't just take a blanket approach here with regards to saying, when it comes to widows, saying, oh, therefore, the church must financially aid and meet the needs of all widows. He doesn't do that. He identifies the fact that families primarily have the responsibility of their own family members. And what this does is this frees the church up then in order to what the scriptures say here with regards to look after true widows, which is someone who doesn't have any family and aren't be able to provide any help for themselves at all. So they are desperate. So this enables the church financially in order to go and help them as much as possible, because widows with families and families within the church, they're taking responsibility and being able to look after themselves. And the way that a family member would look after its own parent and grandparent, and the way that the church looks after a true widow with no outside family, it's all a demonstration of the faith. It's all a demonstration of the gospel, and it's revealing God's love to those around us and to those that are looking on. It goes on to talk about this more in verses 9-13. Let's read that together. No widow may be put on the list of widows unless she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, and is well known for her good deeds, such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the Lord's people, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. As for younger widows, do not put them on such a list, for when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. Thus they bring judgment on themselves, because they have broken their first pledge. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. And not only do they become idlers, but also busybodies who talk nonsense, saying things they ought not to. I think Paul's very clear here, therefore, that simply giving every single widow financial help isn't always beneficial. And that's really important for the church to really sit up and take note of, that sometimes we can think that we're doing a good thing if you just suddenly give someone a load of money. But there's a number of reasons why Paul is writing to Timothy here and saying, listen, you've got to be careful and be wise about how you do that. First of all, that if it's a younger widow, that if they are claiming to dedicate themselves now to the church, that they're not interested in any other man and they're just going to devote themselves to the church and to prayer and to reading the Bible, that maybe there's a time going to come where their sensual desires and their own natural instincts, they suddenly want to get married, and this may be to a non-believer outside the church. And so he wants to protect the church's reputation. But he's also saying we have to be careful because it might create women who become idlers, who therefore don't need to do anything and they've got nothing to do with their lives, so they just become busybodies and they talk nonsense and they basically stick their noses into each other's business. So we have to be really careful about how we help people. And Paul's basically telling us here, listen, primarily it's the family's responsibility to take care of their own family members. And as I said, that frees up the church, therefore, to take those who desperately need it. I think it was quite striking to me when I was thinking about this, about how Paul relates things to in the home first, that the families have the responsibility. And a number of weeks ago, Robert was talking about the qualifications of leaders, of deacons and elders. And really what it does, it talks about the character of the man within the home. And it's really how the gospel starts within the home. And this is just another example of it. That it's a case of how do we live out our faith? How do we live out our religion behind closed doors? Which is true and it's honest. I mean, I think it's quite relevant with regards to the lockdown. A lot of people have relied upon other agencies, and maybe in our own spiritual life as well, we've relied upon the church to give us our spiritual input once a week, where we get our Bible reading, we're able to pray, we're able to send the kids off and someone's going to educate them about the Bible. But suddenly if you remove that institution, well, who's got the responsibility of it then? And the Bible's really clear that this responsibility starts within the home. But that's really where you will see the character of the mother and the father, or the husband and the wife, or for those people who are single, you'll understand that the spiritual light that's within you about us all having to work in our spiritual disciplines, because it starts within the home behind closed doors. And this is where it is again when it comes to the widows within our own family, those people who need help. I mean, who is it that's cutting the grass for them, who's clearing the house, who's doing the shopping, who's making sure the bills are paid, making sure that doing the jobs that need to be done. It's not really just a case of just inviting them out to a carol service once a year, but just as those unbelievers, Paul points out, would look after their elderly members of their own household, then we have a greater obligation to do that as an expression of the gospel. And again, I was thinking about the book of James, about how he says that our faith without any works is dead, and this is just another opportunity in order for us to present our faith as the way that we look after the members of our family who need that. And again, this frees the church up to look at other to look after other members of our community as well. Paul's wanting us to be a doing church. And whenever I was writing this, you know, I was thinking that it's brilliant that this is happening within our church. Maybe you're unaware of, and maybe it's good that people aren't really aware of every good deed that someone does, but there is loads of people within our church who are looking after their own parents or grandparents, who are traveling long distances just to take them to hospital appointments or doctor's appointments, or traveling long distances just to see if they're okay and they do they require any help whatsoever. And there's a lot of time an energy put into looking after them. There's people tidying grandparents' houses and making sure that there's food within the cupboard and that there's a safe environment for them to be in. And none of these people are sticking out on social media or doing any of that. They're doing this all behind closed doors, all for the glory of God. And this is really what Paul is saying here in verse 4. It says, "For this is pleasing to God, as they dutifully and as they lovingly live out the gospel, as they look after the members of their own household." And then, of course, the church is able to look after those who desperately need help as well. But let's move on here to the last group of people it talks about in chapter 5, which is the elders. So let's read two verses here from chapter 17 to 18. "The elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honour, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, 'Do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain, and a worker deserves his wages.'" We at the Bridge here, we have a group of elders, a plurality group of elders, where we're all of equal standing. There's not one who can outbid the other when it comes to decision making and so forth. We all have an equal stance with that. But we do have a difference where some have outside employment, where they're able to earn an income in order to support themselves, while there's other elders who have been called by the church here in order to do fulfill their elders' role on more of a full-time basis. And we as a church have taken the responsibility in order to provide their income. And this is what Paul is talking about here, that he wants us to respect the role of an elder, of those who are preaching and teaching. And this should be reflected in their income, in the way that we financially support them. That not only should we honour them, but it should actually be double honour. There's kind of an increasing respect here of whenever Paul in chapter 5 is talking about how we can respect and honour those who are older than us by treating them as parents. He's talking about how we should honour and financially support and respect the widows. And now he's talking about how we should honour and respect and financially give to the elders. And in doing so, that you're giving them honour for the role and for the seriousness and for the accountability of what they have whenever they're preaching and they're teaching. Now, for me, whenever it says preaching and teaching, it's not just standing up in front of a number of people, even though that's a huge responsibility in order to take God's word here and to lovingly and dutifully and prayerfully preach from it. But it's also, I think, under the umbrella of an elder who maybe meet in small groups, or for those people who would come to them in a counselling session, or just under certain circumstances or with an issue, and that elder has to teach into that situation and teaches according to the scriptures. And I believe that's really what it's talking about whenever elders are for under the preaching and the teachers. And it's talking about the seriousness and the accountability and the weight that it is of doing that from the Bible. I mean, Robert talked a number of weeks ago about how it should never be taken lightly or half-heartedly whenever it comes to preaching and preaching from the Bible, and how every elder, every single elder, will have to give an account for how well they've done this, not to the church, but have to give an account directly to God himself. And yet what's interesting is, even though this is in the Bible teaching, a lot of churches, instead of honouring the elders who do this, instead of respecting them and wanting to double honour them, they can actually try and see what they can get away with whenever it comes to finances. Quite often you'll find that whenever a church calls a pastor, the first statement can be, "Tell me, what is the minimum you need in order to live?" I've never really understood that question. Because what they're basically saying, what is it that we can get away with? We're not going to tell you what we can give you. We want to know the minimum we can get away with. And sometimes if you speak to church leaders or to church members themselves, they would say, well, we don't want the pastor to fall in love with money, and we want to keep them humble. So therefore, it's our duty in order to what? Keep them on the breadline? That's not what the scriptures are teaching us here. In verse 18, talks about an ox quite randomly, but it explains it brilliantly. For Scripture says, let's read verse 18. For Scripture says, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain, and the worker deserves his wages. And what this is relating to here is back in Deuteronomy, whenever God is given the instructions to his people, and he wants them to act and be different to all the nations around them so they can all look upon them and see that they're being different and see that they're following God. And these people, they used to have ox in order to tread out the grain, and they maybe were yoked together, and they used to work them hard. But in order to increase productivity, in order to get the maximum work from them and the maximum amount of grain from them, of course, they used to stick muzzles on them so they couldn't eat any of the food that was laying on the floor, so they'd be able to keep it for themselves. And God said to his people, listen, I want the other nations to see that you are valuing the ox here and the work that it's doing. I want you to take the muzzle off so it may benefit from its own labor. And as it's working, in order to eat whenever it needs to eat. And this is what Paul is using here whenever it's come to talking about the elders. I froze there for a second because I was trying to suddenly think if it's appropriate to call Robert an ox. Does he look like an ox? If we stick a muzzle on an ox, or are we remove the muzzle from Robert? Anyway, I don't know whether he's relating to those people who preach and teach as resembling an ox, but I think you'll understand where I'm going with that one. But anyway, whenever it comes to a church setting, he's saying, take the muzzle off. It doesn't talk about just honouring them. It talks about double honour. Why is that? Simply because of the seriousness and the accountability of what it is to preach from God's word. It's not a case of elevating them in a higher type of position. It's just a case of respecting them. And I think Christians can be sometimes the most hypocritical people, because we all know that how important it is of those people who preach from the word. We all know that it's even the work that's being put into it. And yet whenever it comes to maybe our own finances, it doesn't reflect what we say. And I think this is a really important question for every single church to ask itself. Tell me, those elders that the church are supporting, are we putting the muzzle on them, or are we taking the muzzle off? Are we honouring them? Because we all benefit from what they do. I mean, even the elders that we have presently at the moment, we've all benefited from the counselling, from the wise words. We've all benefited from the preaching. And I think that we now biblically have the responsibility in order to honour them when it comes directly in order to finances. I think it's also really important, because we need to discuss this as a church, that with Robert stepping back this week due to ill health, that we will be looking in order to employ another full-time elder to help us with our mission within Strabane and surrounding areas as we want to reach out. And whenever we approach this person, are they going to see that we are serious about our work here within Strabane? Or is he going to look upon us as if a group of community who, yeah, we want to work you as hard as possible, and we want to give you as little as possible, as if we've got the muzzle on the ox? So there's quite a lot more that I can say here, but I think that, we just need to talk about honouring them within the future, especially with future workers as well. The last thing I want to talk about here is from verse 19, when it talks about basically accusations against elders. And it's quite an interesting point. It says this in verse 19. Do not entertain an accusation against an elder unless it is brought by two or three witnesses. I'll read verse 20 as well. But those elders who are sinning, you are to reprove before everyone so that others may take warning. I think, again, these are just wise words from Paul to Timothy here. The reason with regards to why there should be two or three witnesses to me is because basically that eradicates anyone who's just got a personal gripe or dislike to an elder. Because you can imagine if that was a charge every time and there was an accusation that had to be taken seriously, that everyone had a dislike to one elder. Well, I can imagine how many times some of us will be in the dock for that. But whenever there's two or three witnesses, it gives validity to that accusation. It becomes serious because this isn't just a dislike between one person, but this is actually something that a number of people have felt within the church itself and so should be taken seriously. And then as we read there in verse 20, that whenever there is persistent sinning by one of the elders here, that there should be a reprover above everyone. And this goes therefore before the church. Now, I don't think this is necessarily saying that every single sin that an elder makes needs to be presented before the church, because we'd have to have daily meetings if that was the case. But what it's talking about here is the seriousness of the sin damaging the reputation of the church. He's talking about persistent sin with regards to people already going to them and telling them to stop, and yet they refuse to. And therefore, this needs to be dealt with. And again, following on from the rest of the chapter, this is so elders can be respected, because if sin is not dealt with, well, then that's going to raise a lot of questions and doubts and accusations. But if the church know that whenever there is sin within the eldership and that is dealt with in a serious manner, well, then there can be trust given there. There can be honour and there can be respect given there to the role that they carry out. I mean, just think about it yourselves. The people that I work with have no time for church because of the terrible mistakes that churches have made in covering up horrendous sins and crimes that have the historical evidence that has come on them. And even less than that, you might find pastors who are conveniently moving on very swiftly, even though there's some kind of suspicious motives, or there's been a whisper of an accusation and no one knows anything about it and they've gone on. And then leadership have left themselves in all sorts of problems, as people can then point the finger and there's nothing in the open. But if the church knows that persistent sin will be dealt with and it is presented in front of the church, it's only then that can they trust and respect those within the role. I think there's also, it's very clear that Paul makes it another reason in order to make it public as well, and that's as a warning towards other people, and that's just a reminder of God's good grace within our own lives, and a reminder that sin is not accepted within God's church, and that we are to take the things seriously. This isn't a case of finger pointing and saying wow and gossiping and looking at someone else, but it's a time of understanding of what God has saved us from, and from the darkness and the wrath and the slavery of our own sin, how it could happen to anyone. And yet it's also an understanding that sin is not permitted within the church, that this is God's church, we are his people. This is the gospel being lived out here. I think I wrote down the words Ananias and Sapphira with regards to whenever the early church was starting, and you could just, whenever they were damaging the reputation of the church because they kept money for themselves, well, the judgment came upon them was death immediately, that it wasn't accepted, that we are God's children and we are representing him. And he's going to take this very seriously when there's sin. So it's a great warning to ourselves. I think there's a number of things that we could go on to say, even the way that you appoint elders to be slow in order to do that for a number of reasons. I think that's self-explanatory if you go on and read the rest of the two or three verses there. But I just want to close really by saying all of these relationships here, all these groups of people, I think it's an opportunity for us to be shaped by the gospel, for our church to be different, and in the way that we would be respectful to those who are older than us, the way that we treat those who are younger than us like our own family members, the way that we have the responsibility and can present the gospel to people within our own family, where we don't become a burden to the church, but we free the church in order to help those within the community who desperately need it, and we give and respect the widows by helping them financially, and then again as our responsibility as a church to honour those, to double honour those who are preaching from the word and teaching from the word, and to remove the muzzle from them and respect them. And then also with regards to the openness within the church, so there can be that trust and there can be that respect that Paul is wanting here for the elders within the church as well. And so next week, Robert might talk about those who are under slavery as well. But let me just close by reading a verse from 1 Peter 2, verse 9, because when it comes to the dynamics of the church and who we are and why we're here and how the importance of our relationships as a church, I just thought of 1 Peter 2, verse 9. It says, "But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." Have a great week. Bye-bye.